Good morning, all, and welcome. We are going to begin the Tuesday, March 13th meeting of the Government Operations and Elections Committee, and we do have a quorum. And Representative Peterson, have you had a chance to look at the minutes from our previous meeting of March 7th?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I move the minutes.
I'm a chair, not a Mr. Chair.
Sorry, wrong committee.
We'll just help you with the details here today.
I move the minutes from March 7th.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. All those in favor of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? All right, the motion prevails. Our first bill, Representative Chair Dean, will give you a chance, not even have to sit down, just head up to the testifying table, and we will take House File 2574. I will move that before the committee to be re-referred to the Committee on Higher Education. Chair Dean, welcome to the committee. And I have moved House File 2574 before the committee to be re-referred to the Higher Education Committee. And we'll give you a chance to set up the bill. I see that there's an A2 amendment. Is that an author's amendment today?
It is.
All right. We will have you set up the bill, and we'll take your amendment and get it in the form that you would like. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The bill that you have before you sets up a rare disease advisory council, which offers an opportunity for Minnesota to continue to lead in the area of rare disease research and discovery. We have two of the world's leading research institutions in the state with the University of Minnesota and with the Mayo Clinic. What this does is it allows patients and their families to form a group so that if you are one of 1,000 people with a rare disease or one of 100 people, or in some cases in Minnesota, one of maybe just a handful of families with a rare disease, that you can take advantage of our state and take advantage of the research institutions that we have in identifying not just the diagnosis, but for the treatment and ultimately for clinical trials to try to get some help for cures moving forward. But what this bill does is it allows for a first step in that direction, and what the Amendment A2 does is it just clarifies within page 3, line 17, it just adds a clause, an existing resource to assist in these patients with the health plan enrollment. Talks a little bit about the insurance side of getting that piece into it. As when you set up any advisory council, the makeup of that council and the decisions around that council are important. We focus on the University of Minnesota and for that, and one of the world's leaders in rare disease research has just taken over, Dr. Tolar, as the dean of the medical school. We're very blessed as a state to have him there, and we look for this to assist him and the school in leading research moving forward. With that, members, I would appreciate your support of the A2 amendment and the bill.
Chair Dean, I will move the A2 amendment to House File 2574 to get the bill in the shape that the author requests. Discussion? Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Dean. I think that this Rare Disease Advisory Council is just a great idea. With regard to the resources for helping people enroll in...
Representative Halverson, we're to the A2 amendment.
I think that that's what's in the amendment.
You just want to make sure. I saw a couple of hands go up just to make sure that we are on
the A2. That's the change in the amendment, so that changes...
Proceed, please.
With regard to that change of adding resources for enrollment, can you say more about that? Because we do currently have... people defined out in the system as healthcare navigators to help with that. Is that something that would help bolster our healthcare navigator system?
Chair Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Halverson, the language from the A2 amendment came from the policy director of the National Organization for Rare Disorders. And I think what it is attempting to do is to try to really solve one of the problems that families do have, which is if you have usually in most instances a child with a diagnosed rare disease that you can find insurance for them. That is what that is attempting to do as how that would relate to the navigator system that we have. My guess would be that most navigators are not very well versed with rare disease diagnosis cures, nor should they be, because thankfully rare things are rare.
Representative Halverson, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it sounds like this is a national view of a situation, and perhaps moving forward, we can look at how this interacts more directly with Minnesota. I do think that having this kind of resource in our Navigator system is sounds really important, because you do need to make sure that everybody has access to the care that they need. And if that is something that we can do better within the Navigator system, I think those resources make a lot of sense.
Chair Dean, follow up to Representative Halverson's comments.
Fair point.
Representative Joachim, all right. Seeing no other questions on the A2 amendment, all those in favor of the A2 amendment to House File 2574, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion carries. Representative Dean, the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate your support on this. And for members on the health care committee, or might be on the health care committee down the road, this is going to be a very important thing as common diseases become differentiated and specialized and even personalized, their medications and cures also do as well. And rare diseases affect just a few number of people in many cases, but they oftentimes lead the way. For example, the Mayo Clinic has a program called the Beauty Project, which differentiates breast cancer disease down to the individual level, so that we are developing currently chemotherapeutic remedies for patients with cancer that are specific to one cancer in one person. That's not in the future. That's happening right now in our state. So that what we're going to be seeing is more personalized and more specialized medication, so that although you might be voting for a bill that helps people with rare diseases, what we're going to be finding out as the years go on, thankfully, that this is going to be affecting many, many Minnesotans with what we now think of as common diseases. So with that, members, I would appreciate your support.
Before we open it up to, I should say, Chair Dean, any testifiers accompanying you today? All right, members, any questions of Chair Dean? Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, just a voice of support and to thank him for working with Erica Barnes on this bill. She's a constituent. I know this is a wonderful organization that's been helping her with this bill, and thank you.
Other questions for Chair Dean? If not, anyone from the public wishing to testify on the matter before the committee, House File 2574 as amended? Anyone wishing to testify on House File 2574 as amended? Seeing none and hearing none, no other member questions. Chair Dean, we will give you the final word on the bill.
Appreciate your support.
I renew my motion that House File 2574, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Higher Education. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Chair Dean, while we have you there, we will also bring up your next bill this morning, which is House File 2725. Remember our conversation from last week, members of the committee. 2725 to be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law. Chair Dean, if you want to set up the bill for us, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. What this bill is a continuation of some of the work that we have been working on around the area of eligibility determination for our public programs. And as many of you know, our public programs that we have in the state of Minnesota, whether they be Medicaid, Medicare, Minnesota Care, they are state managed and they are county delivered. We've got counties all over the state of Minnesota. There are 87 of them, and some of them are small and some of them are large. They all have to deal with managing and delivering our care systems. So if you are in Cook County, Minnesota, there's fewer than 5,000 people in that county. So just if you think about having a county with 5,000 people in it, you still have to manage the same number of state-based programs that we currently have. Now think about Olmsted County with 100,000 people, with scaling that up in the city of Rochester, Minnesota, or if you have Hennepin County, which has hundreds of thousands of people, with the cities of Minneapolis and surrounding areas. They all have to do the same thing. They're all trying to relate to the same programs. They all have to follow the same rules. And what has happened with the advent and the implementation of MNsure is that they have had to deal with families that are trying to get services delivered through the counties through an eligibility determination system that just is supposed to say, do I qualify or do I not qualify, and how do I get services? And we have had many years of the problems that you have heard from your constituents and dealing with the counties for how difficult it may be to enroll families and to get them the services that they require. I have been, for the last couple of years, with several of you on cubicle ride-alongs in many of our counties, so that when you hear about somebody applying on the old system or applying on paper or using a quote-unquote green screen, what does that actually mean for a county caseworker trying to enroll a family or trying to insert a life change? Meaning, I had a kid, we moved, just minor changes to existing files, how that can blow up the case files and prevent people from getting care or getting them kicked off of health care in many cases. So what this does is this says that as we move forward, it says two things that we really have to focus on, and these are the two things of the bill. What we're currently doing right now with our counties is we're saying that you have to provide county-based services, county-delivered services with state and federal money and determine eligibility, and you also have to enter the world of private health insurance with our MinSure program. What this says is that we're going to divide that with a bright line that says our counties no longer have to be in the private health insurance business and get them out of that business. I've heard that from big counties and small counties that that is something that would be welcome. The second thing that it does is it anticipates that we are going to have an IT upgrade within our MinSure program. Now, if we keep MinSure and we call it MinSure and we have IBM Curum, we are going to be spending hundreds of millions of dollars in addition to what we've already spent on that program moving forward to get it to work. Now, we could argue the timing of that, but I don't think anyone that has knowledge of this area would say that the current system will work and that it will be implemented without more money than that being sent forward. So what this says is that we are going to take a pause before we spend, after spending $400 million of IT development money on more IT development money with the same vendors, IBM and Curum, moving forward, that we take a pause and that we look at that. And we, instead of imposing this on our counties, we put the counties in charge and put them in the center of this wheel for design moving forward. So it gives them a blank piece of paper and a crayon and some time to implement a program that is going to affect them and the people that they serve more than anyone else. This doesn't impose any timelines or deadlines, but what it does do is it says that this is how we should approach IT moving forward, by looking first at the people we serve and second at the people that serve them and figuring out that connection first and making that work and putting them at the center. Now, the counties have been somewhat apprehensive about this idea, and I would just like to be the first person to say that I understand why, because they have been told time and time again that the legislature is here to help and pull the rug out from underneath their feet. So I not only understand and empathize with them, but I encourage them to criticize and be at the table earlier rather than later, and would welcome their input and their criticism for moving forward. I won't be around to implement this. Many of you will, and many of you are wrestling with many of our IT systems in the state, and this is merely a suggestion on where to start next for MinSure. With that, members, I entertain your questions.
Chair Dean, before we go to member questions, I do want to draw members and those present today their attention to the folks who are up on my left-hand side here. These are students joining us today in government operations on a day at the Capitol from St. Peter High School. Let's give them a welcome. And Chair Dean, do you have any testifiers today on this bill?
I don't.
All right. Member questions on House File 2725 at this time. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dean, I heard you talking about not investing in the current system, maybe building a new system. Are we going to be starting from scratch, building a new system, IT system? And where's the money for that going to come from?
We are a policy committee, but it is a fair question that Representative Nelson asks. And before I ask you to answer that question, Chair Dean, members, the part of this bill that is within our committee's purview are Sections 2, 4, and the repealers. Sections 2, 4, and the repealers. Chair Dean, to Representative Nelson's question, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson. That's a fair question, and it's a good one to ask. What you might say is, well, where is the money that we're going to be spending now coming from? And the answer to that question is one that we are delving into in our committee, which is to look at the DHS implementation and IT build-out budget that they have. Some of that money is federal drawdown money for IT systems, and some of that is within the existing budget that they currently have represented to us that they intend to spend on that. So what we are saying is before that you invest continued amounts of IT development money from the federal government that we currently have, that we say, hold on there, Baba Louie, maybe we ought to take a step back and look at the design of this. If we are going to be spending that much money, that it may, in fact, make more sense to change vendors. It may not. But it seems that we have an RFI that expects that we're going to have the same vendor, and I would at least ask the question if that does make sense at this point.
Chair Dean, is Baba Louie that you refer to unavailable to testify today before the committee? Or?
Mr. Chair, hold on there, Baba Louie is a statutory term of art.
Very good. Follow-up, Representative Nelson.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I guess, Representative Dean, I guess the question I have, and we've seen the last couple of big IT projects that the state has done, there have been issues with, and it sounds to me like we're going to go back to the drawing board and pick a new vendor. And as we all know, with the Minlar system that we've had issues with, they started out with a outside vendor, and that they failed miserably. We took it inside and had issues because of that. I guess the question is starting all over again. Scares me a little bit because the people that rely on this computer system to get access to their health care, we may be putting them in a big bind. So I have some concerns with this bill going forward.
Representative Dean, follow-up to Representative Nelson's final comments.
Representative Nelson, I appreciate that, and I have seen county caseworkers who are overjoyed that they get a patch or something that will help them work around a glitch that they have within the system. I've also talked to many, many Minnesotans who, because of one of those patches and glitches and workarounds, was re-entered into the system as though they were living in another state so that they could just kick out the date where it would be re-examined just to make it go through. They entered them in as though they came from another state just to get their cards printed so they could go to CVS and get some medicine, only to find out a year later that the system kicks them off and they're booted off of healthcare again because they don't live in Minnesota. And the person who did the workaround is no longer there because of those kinds of workarounds. We've got a system that has failed in every other state that it has been rolled out in. I've not found testimony that says that this IBM Curum system is functional in any state. The best state or the best place that we have is, I believe, not in the country, but state after state that has tried to implement this has either abandoned it or is currently having the same problems that we are. So I think that it's a fair question to ask before we move forward with good money after bad. Is it good money after bad, or is it a fix? And I think that's the work of the legislature and this commission to figure out.
The next member question comes from Representative Halverson, followed by Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And there's a lot going on in this bill. And the meat of the bill is, I believe, kind of in the repealers. It seems to do a few things. One, will eliminate MinSure altogether, so that conduit for the 100-some thousand Minnesotans who are using that system to purchase insurance will be gone. It sounds like if we we also are going to eliminate, so eliminate the Minsure Board. We're going to eliminate the committee that was put in place in order to determine eligibility. So there is a group that was tasked with helping to determine eligibility. One of the things that we've been trying to do, and to say the system is a complete failure, I think is incorrect. And I think that we need to be working better with the counties to find out what they really need. If they have pause about this particular proposal, I think that we need to listen to what their concerns actually are. I think it would be helpful to hear this. The counties are part of the eligibility system committee that was put together, and we're going to take that away, replace it with something else, and I think come up with potentially 87 different ways for people to enter the market. Keep in mind, we also talked about the value of navigators in the system with regard to the last bill that we talked about, that people need help, particularly in the individual market and the small group market, finding out where they belong and where the best plans are for them. And we are going to remove the navigator system as well. And so removing all that help that we were providing to Minnesotans that have been very successful. Minnesotans have done a much better job. In fact, for those of you who aren't on HHS reform, you guys didn't get to hear from the agents who have said that the system is actually working, that the agents are getting to work with the customers that they want to work with, and that they're not having to do the eligibility determination in their offices, that it's getting done by the eligibility determination in the counties. And so I think that we are taking a sledgehammer to a system that we really need to be engaging the counties and not doing a legislature down fix on what I think is old information.
Representative Dean, comment, follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Halverson, I think if you talk to the counties and ask them how involved they were in the design and implementation of Minsure, that they will tell you that they had no place at the table and they were not asked, and this was something that was done to them and not for them.
Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairs and members. It's interesting that Minlars and Minsure were brought up I think from questions about this bill. Frankly, it's because of what we learned and are suffering from those two software rollouts. I mean, requiring navigators, if you had a working system that's usable, I mean, there are a lot of huge volume systems out there in the real world that provide great information service they're navigable, that people can use them. You don't need to have a whole new structure of support. You don't, if the back end of Minsure worked and functioned, you wouldn't need to have, additional workarounds for eligibility, because we have systems that work to see if you're eligible for, property tax refund and other things that look at data for eligibility. You've got federal systems, MAGI, that are made to do that function. Other states had systems where eligibility functioned. And frankly, Minlars, which we're seeing a lot of now, that system has caused the local deputy registrars to hire additional staff. It's caused the departments, whether it's the Department of of DVS or of Minute, they're hiring additional people because it doesn't work. You look at the current system now that our counties have repeatedly told us year after year isn't functioning, when it takes about 20 minutes to change an address. You get a family of four, it doesn't take 20 minutes. It takes four times 20 minutes because they have to go through all these screens, each and every person. A truly functional system for our counties and our citizens wouldn't require all this BS, wouldn't require counties to add staff to do work that should have been done with the system. So you put Band-Aids on, put Band-Aids. You know, Band-Aids, they fall off or they cause other problems. Frankly, our citizens deserve a truly functional system. And the sooner that we wake up and decide to give it to them, the sooner we stop having these repetitious, costly boondoggles of things that just don't work and cause more problems. So frankly, I'm really optimistic that maybe we can actually do it right instead of continually trying to Band-Aid, add on, and paper over these failing systems. So I commend the author for making a valiant effort to try and provide what the citizens need.
Representative Nathan, followed by Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is, where are the counties on this, and can they give their perspective? Because I believe that the counties, as you said, bear the burden of providing the services. So this, to me, would be really important, is to have the counties give their perspective.
Chair Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I don't know if anyone from the counties is here today to offer testimony or not. They did offer testimony in the Health Policy Committee, and their concerns are that that they'd be brought in with enough time to provide input on exactly what they're going to need, and also that they have the financing. One of the pieces of bad information that got out to the counties was that this was going to make each county purchase their own system, or that we'd have different systems, and that is not at all what the bill says or what the bill does, or the intent of the bill. It anticipates that we are likely going to have less support from the federal government down the road, that we're going to have more authority and from a state level, and that it really appreciates the fact that whether we have a Democrat governor or a Republican governor, that governor is probably going to have a different system than we currently have, and that the county caseworkers are going to be dealing with the same family members 5 years from now, whether we have a Republican president or a Democrat president or a Republican governor or a Democrat governor, that these families tend to be Minnesotans that need care, and that the county caseworkers, in fact, are the ones that can best spot fraud, they can best help people, and they can best get people on the programs that they should be on and off of the ones that they shouldn't be on.
Representative Mason, follow-up?
No, thank you.
Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chairman Dean. I don't serve on HHS, as you know, so a lot of this, I haven't had the ability to hear a lot of the discussions around this, so I'm kind of looking at this as a perspective of somebody who may be a customer to it. And also as a former staffer in the other body who was there when, in Judiciary Committee, when we went over all the details on Chapter 13, which I do note once on page 3 it's mentioned, but just regarding the steering committee. So I think this has a lot more work to flesh out, especially when it comes to sharing data and information for the system to work. As for navigators, if you think of navigators equivalent to customer service, which is what we want to provide people, everywhere we go where we have a lot of the self-checkouts at other stores, and try not to say stores, different stores, you'll have somebody standing there at the self-checkout line helping you navigate the system, because it may be new and you may need a reminder because you don't do it all the time. When you're applying for health care, you're doing it once a year most of the time, and you're not going to remember how that process went before. You need a navigator. That's what we want to provide, is good customer service. So I want you to think of that. You even see them in parking garages, because people can't manage to always work the insert your card, get your receipt. And then when it comes to patches and software systems, I have family members that are techies. I don't try to understand it, but I know the word patches are very common. And when you have a system, you're going to need upgrades. One of the reasons why Minsure had such a hard time was they were trying to upgrade a system that was almost 30 years old. We have had a history of neglecting our systems in this state when it comes to data and computer systems and having things function. It'd be like driving your car without getting an oil change. We have a large problem when it comes to our technology in this state that we have kicked the can down the road multiple times. We have systems running on Fortran. You know, you might say that's great because no one can hack it because they don't remember it. But there is some concern there. So looking at creating or developing a whole nother software system on a bill that's only like 8 pages long without a lot of details in there, I just kind of worry about throwing that out there. And I just had to say, when it comes to navigators or customer service, you're right. The customer should be at the center of all of our IT that we're doing, and we need to do that. So just some thoughts. Thank you.
I have no other member questions at this time. Is there anyone from the public that would like to testify on the matter before the committee, House File 2725? Representative Joaquim.
I forgot to ask for a roll call, too, please.
Oh, great idea, because I was going to do that, too. Chair Dean, did you want to comment on anything? It doesn't look like we have any public testimony at this time. Oh, Mr. Hagard will come down. If you'd like to comment on Representative Joaquim's comments, so Mr. Hagard's coming down, that's fine. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony, Mr. Hagard.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Matt Hilgart, and I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties. And admittedly so, I'm a little in the deep end today. I usually cover property taxes. This is far more complex than that. Our Executive Director, Julie Ring, did speak at a prior committee on this bill, and I think Chair Dean eloquently and fairly stated some of the concerns that counties have. I think first and foremost, we're thankful to be part of the conversation because sometimes when these technologies are rolled out, counties aren't at the table, and so we want to thank you for at least making that a point and goal of this bill. There is some nervousness and apprehension on counties kind of being an IT developer or potentially being seen as the folks who will be coming up with the actual solutions and IT implementation, and if that would bring consistency among the state. But as Chair Dean said, we are in early start of conversations on this bill, and we are very interested in working with him as this goes on. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Halverson, do you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Hager, for coming down and stating some concerns. With regard to this getting up and running, I think that you indicated that there's not a lot of definition, maybe, and I think that Chair Dean contends that maybe that's a good thing, that we can just start and be super creative from the get-go, which may or may not be great. But what does that mean in terms of turning the system over? I think that where the counties are right now, and you can comment on this, is making the system work to its fullest potential. So particularly we talk about the eligibility determination. That's incredibly complex, and there are state and federal and county systems that are all working in play for that. So we'll just do a fruit basket upset, throw that all out the window. You know, our current eligibility system that we've been working to build, and that have certainly experienced some hiccups. And I couldn't agree more that the governance structure at the beginning of Minsure had some problems, and that was my major concern with the bill when it was first passed. However, I want to be sure that we are not leaving Minnesotans high and dry. I want to be sure that we're not leaving our agents high and dry. I want to be sure that we are not leaving people who need health care high and dry while we figure this out yet again, as opposed to trying to, you know, get our system to the function at its highest potential. And it feels like that's the road that we're on. And it feels like that's where the county's work has been focused. And so can you comment on how that switchover would happen? Minnesotans have gone through quite a bit of change, so.
Is that directed to the bill author or to the testifier?
I think I'd like to hear both comment on that.
Very good. We'll start with Representative Dean.
Sure, Mr. Chair and Representative Halverson. You know, that's really the important part of this bill is how that happens. So whether we have, and it anticipates that we're going to have a different IT system 3 years from now than we have right now, whether we do nothing or whether we implement this bill or whether we implement another bill. And how you do that is going to be incredibly important. We're going to have to seek and receive waivers to do this from the federal government that will look at the implementation for that and also the timelines that we want to keep open. We don't want to force a timeline that we can't do, which is the mistake that we've made in the past. So we don't want to do that. The second thing would be the appropriations and really looking at the amount of money that we currently have to deal with within DHS of how much, let's really crank down how much money we're really talking about in terms of fixing what we have and looking at an alternative to that. But we don't want a fixed timeline on implementation. And that, I think, is the most important thing in a rollout of an IT system that I think if we were to all be honest and look backwards at MnSure, we would say it was too big. It was rolled out too quickly, and it didn't have the right people at the table when they needed to be there. And so that says that for the next governor in particular to really have at their disposal a plan that would say that we could implement something that would be county-centered moving forward, and that's not currently what we have. Let me just close by saying that with the MNLAR system, that's currently what's on the front page of the paper, and if you want to look down the road to see what happens, that's really where MNSure, unfortunately, the road it has traveled down. If you can't transfer the title of a vehicle or a trailer, that's a bad thing, and it's an annoying thing, and it causes you disturbance. If you get kicked off of a healthcare plan or your kid goes to CVS with a card and can't get medication, that's a different deal, and that's something that that we have screwed up and that we need to be accountable for. So that's something we need to get right.
And to the testifier to follow up on Representative Halverson's previous question. And members, we are at this point securing a room for this evening because we do have a rather robust agenda, and we're probably going to be at the call of the chair about 9 o'clock just for your information because a couple of us have pensions tonight. So just trying to help you to manage the time here. I have been very lenient with members and their questions outside of sections 2 and 4, and so it's important for them, so we'll get a chance to discuss all of the committee business later this evening if necessary. To the testifier.
Mr. Chair and Representative Halverson, in addition to what Chair Dean stated, I think counties are just still learning and grasping, trying to figure out what this bill means, and then also just talking to commissioners about what their particular interest in maybe adding things to the bill or just figuring out what this means for current system management, customers, et cetera, the interface that we have on a day-to-day basis. And so we're still learning in the learning process about this.
Representative Halverson.
Mr. Chair, I just think it's really important to note that the repealers, which are under the jurisdiction of this committee, will go into effect if this waiver is approved by the federal government. That is a big if, certainly, but the fact is there's no connection to everything in the system going away. All of the eligibility steering committee, all of the work that they do goes away when this, if this waiver is approved, and it's not connected to any new system being ready to go. So there's no seamless handoff that's in this bill, and I think that is a major concern. If we're going to dissolve every single piece of one program, to not have a seamless handoff and a plan for that is a big concern.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on the matter before the committee, House File 2725? Seeing no other member questions, seeing no public testimony, Chair Dean will give you the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Appreciate your time, committee time. I know it's valuable. Sorry we went a little longer than thought.
A roll call being requested. I will renew my motion that House File 2725 be referred to the Committee on Civil Law. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair O'Driscoll.
Yes.
Representative Pugh. Yes.
Representative Bliss. Representative Fenton.
Yes.
Representative Freiberg. 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 Sorry. Representative Halverson.
No.
Representative Jessup. Representative Mason.
No.
Representative Nash.
Yep.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Peterson.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
The.
Representative Sandsted.
No.
Representative Swizinski.
Yes.
Representative Tice.
Yes.
Representative West.
Yes.
Representative Joachim.
No.
Joachim. No.
On a vote of 9 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails. The bill is re-referred.
Thank you, Chair and members.
And we will now revert back to the regular agenda. We do have other bill authors here. Representative Detmer, if you'd like to come forward, please, and then we'll take Representative Kreisha's bill after that. Chair Detmer, welcome to the committee. I had the opportunity of hearing this bill last week, and hopefully it will go as quickly in this committee as it did in your committee last week as well, sir.
Thank you. Welcome
to the committee, and I will move House File 3278 to be referred to the General Register. The bill is before us. Chair Detmer, if you'd like to go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to be honest with you. An Army guy got held up by a Marine Corps major, so... I hate to admit that, but it happened today, but it's my fault.
Well, it could happen to any of us.
My fault. That's why I'm late. Okay. But it's my fault. Okay. He did have rank on me until I convinced him that a retired warrant officer has ranks on everybody. So.
But you're a legislator. Does that count for anything?
That didn't count. That didn't
Got
count.
It. Proceed with your bill.
House file 3278, again, it's a bill that clarifies current language that the Adjutant General is responsible for operating our department. The department and the military reservations, and as opposed to simply protecting them. And the bill also exempts the department from regulations from local, county, and units of government. So with me today is testifiers is Mr. Don Kerr, Director of the Department of Military Affairs.
Very good. Mr. Kerr, welcome to the committee. If you'll proceed with your identify yourself and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. And we've asked Chair Detmer to bring this bill forward today to clarify statute that we ran into a problem in Morrison County, and just thought it was appropriate to clarify the statute, made a few minor changes in the rest of the bill. The key, of course, in this one was making sure we clarified the exemption from local oversight or local ordinance. Oversight is still okay as long as they're enforcing state or federal law.
Very good. Representative Detmer, do you have other testifiers today as well?
Captain Baker here, and he's here to answer any questions, too.
Captain Baker, did you want to make any comments before the committee? You're certainly welcome to, sir, and as Chair Detmer said, you are available for questions. It's your call.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just to introduce myself. I'm Justin Baker. I'm an attorney with the State's Judge Advocate's Office, essentially the general counsel team for the Department of Military Affairs, and I am open to any questions.
We got Jay Corr with us today, too. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Kerr, you mentioned something about it. You ran into an issue with Morrison County. You know, what laws or what ordinances, local ordinances, are we looking to not be under under the thumb from, I guess?
Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, the specific issue had to do with the disposal of hazardous waste. And the county tried to direct us to dispose of the waste in their landfill as opposed to other authorized methods that still comply with federal and state law.
Representative Nelson, follow up?
No, thank you. That's just wanted to know what they were talking about.
Certainly. Certainly. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Detmer or anyone else that might be able to answer, just out of curiosity, is there a definition in statute for military reservations? Because I don't see one within this section of law.
Chair Detmer, or maybe we can refer to Ms. Dyson for clarification on that. Sorry, Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair, I do not know the definition.
Add to the list new microphones as well, things this room needs. Ms. Dyson will look at to see if she can provide clarification. Perhaps the chair or Mr. Kerr would know the answer to that question.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. She's on the right path.
Very good. Representative Joachim, if we can put your question on hold, if you have others. I do have other member questions. We will come back if we get an answer for you. Representative Sosinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question. Kind of, where are just local units of governments, counties at on this?
Chair Detmer, Mr. Kerr. We also do have a representative from the counties that was here earlier. I don't know if they want to testify or not. We'll start with Chair Detmer.
Nobody has contacted me, so that's why I'm going forward with the legislation. And if any counties or any units of government had some questions, I would have definitely brought them in.
And Mr. Kerr, are you aware of anything at this time?
Mr. Chair and members, I am not aware of any county concerns or local government concerns. And frankly, we felt this was kind of an unnecessary distinction because the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution handles it at the federal level. It's actually in Minnesota statute that we're supposed to be dealt with as a federal entity. And also the construct of Minnesota's government, and forgive me, I forget the term of art here, but the structure of Minnesota's government is supposed to set the state up as a superior entity to the subordinate forms of government, and we just felt it was necessary to clarify the statute.
And Representative Sosinski, my hunch is that this is a very localized issue for Morrison County since that's where the camp is located. Ms. Dyson, we'll refer back to Representative Joachim's inquiry if you have an answer for us.
Mr. Chair and Representative Joachim, in the same statute that the bill is, chapter statute that the bill is amending, the definition section in 190.05 subdivision 3A defines military reservations as without limitation includes military installations, armories, air bases, and facilities owned or controlled by the state for military purposes.
Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Dyson. That's what I was wondering, because it has to do with more than just the one location we're talking about. It's all the armories and... All right, just wanted to check.
So we now have all learned something we can use at our next cocktail party. Other member questions at this time? Seeing none, is there anyone from the public who'd like to testify on the matter before the committee this morning? Anyone else wishing to testify on House File 3278 before the committee? Seeing none and hearing none, Chair Detmer, we will give you the final word this morning, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Thank you.
I renew my motion that House File 3278 be re-referred to the committee, to the General Register. To the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. Representative, thank you, Chair Detmer. Gentlemen, our next bill is going to be Representative Kreisha's Bill 2996. I will move House File 2996 before the committee to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. And Representative Kreisha is making his way to the testifying table this morning. Representative Kreisha, good morning, sir, and welcome. Your bill is before the committee for consideration to be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. You will proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Just very quickly, the reason I'm here for this bill establishes a training academy for social workers. We have in the child protection area. We have a huge need right now. Anybody that enters the child protection system that wants to be a social worker won't get trained for at least 4 to 5 months. With this bill, we're going to move that forward. We're going to establish a training academy. And what I need this committee for is there's a section 5, 3.21 to 3.23, where the Commissioner of Human Services may adopt rules necessary to establish this academy. So the idea being we've already come through health and human services reform. We're on our way to find the money in finances, and what I need this committee to do is approve that there can be rulemaking in process to make sure it's efficient. And with that, I'll stand for questions, Mr.
Members, questions for Representative Kreisha on House File 2996, the rulemaking section. Seeing none, is there anyone from the public that would like to testify on the matter before the committee? Anyone from the public that would like to testify? Seeing none, hearing none, Representative Kreisha, I think you're going to get the easiest bill of the day. Final comments.
I just would say, thank you very much. It's quick and efficient. We're through. I will tell you, of all the legislation I've carried, this is probably one of the most noteworthy and impactful that you'll see down the road. So thank you very much.
With that, I renew my motion that House File 2996 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. The next bill that we will have is 3395.
Chair O'Driscoll, welcome to the committee. And would you like to move your bill before the committee for re-referral to the General Register?
Madam Chair, it's always a pleasure to be able to appear before the Government Operations and Elections Committee. And so I would like to bring House File 3395 before the committee to be re-referred to the General Register. I do have some testifiers if we need them today, but I think it's a standard matter that I might be able to handle. This bill was brought to me by the members of the Metropolitan Airports Commission, and as many of you know, that is a vital economic asset to the state of Minnesota for both recreation and business purposes and others. It has become apparent to the Metropolitan Airports Commission and to others that the current salary limits that are in place are causing them to lose the ability to retain people and to attract people to be able to work at the MAC, if you will. And that's a very concerning item for myself and many others, given the fact that we do rely quite heavily on the Metropolitan Airports Commission for Minnesota's economy. As anybody who traveled to Minnesota for the Super Bowl this year knows that they did a marvelous job of being able to move a volume of traffic in and out and help showcase Minnesota in the bold north. This time around. And so what I'd like to do, members, is I'd like to also remind you that the salary limits that are in place right now for the MAC, the MAC itself is organized slightly different than any other kind of political subdivision. They own assets at the airport, the parking ramp, the terminals. They generate gate rent. They also charge concessionaires. So they're more of an enterprise fund. If you're familiar with local government, oftentimes sewer water districts are organized those ways as well. And so we're just asking for the ability for the MAC to be able to remove that salary cap, to be able to offer wages and benefit packages, to be able to retain and attract those that they need to be able to keep our airport here in Minnesota as a world-class airport. With that, Madam Chair, I'm willing to stand for questions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. And members, any questions? Yes, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just guess I want to add on to what Representative or Chair O'Driscoll pointed out, but the Metropolitan Airports Commission receives no funding from the state, which is another reason why they should be able to be removed from this cap limit. The money that they pay and the money that they pay there, that they spend, is all generated at the airport. So there is nothing, you know, if it was state dollars going in, there might be a difference of saying, no, they should be bound by it. But because they don't receive any state dollars, it makes sense to remove them from the cap.
Members, are there any other questions? If not, are there any members from the public who would like to testify to this bill? Do I see somebody that's raising her hand? Sorry. Are there any other members of the public that would like to testify to the bill? No. Okay. Members, any further discussion? Okay. Chair O'Driscoll, any closing remarks?
It's a great bill. Vote yes. I renew my motion that House File 3395 be referred to the General Register, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair O'Driscoll renews his motion that House File 3395 be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And all opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and House File 339 is re-referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Bill's on the way. And next up, we have Representative Thiessen, House File 1541.
Thanks. Representative Thiessen, welcome to the Government Operations and Elections Committee. I will move House File 1541 before the committee to be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. And before we get started, I think you have a couple of amendments that you'd like to take, one amendment to the bill.
There is an amendment, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And just to put it in the order, I'd like to proceed with the bill.
Sure. But I will move the DE1 amendment for Representative Thiessen to get the bill in the form that he would like. All those in favor of the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the form that the author would like, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? And Representative Thiessen, the bill is in the form that you would like in the order. Go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill is pretty straightforward in its presentation, maybe more complicated in its implementation, but essentially what it is asking is that the legislature make itself live up to the accessibility standards that we currently require of all of our state agencies. So we passed a law several years ago that required state agencies to comply with a federal standard that passed even earlier. And the general notion here is that we just want to make sure that every one of our citizens, including people with disabilities, and this is particularly focused on people with sight disabilities and who are illiterate or preliterate, that can't access information by reading it, that they have as much access to what's going on in their state government as any other citizen. So the state agencies are already implementing this. We do have someone here from a state agency if there are technical questions. That is the goal. And the gist of the bill. So I'm happy to answer any questions that people might have. And just as an example, right now some of the documents that we put in that you have in your packets are actually not accessible to people that can't read on the website. And so that would just be an example, or they can't see. Because, there is technology today that allows many documents to be read aloud. The way that we are currently operating in the legislature, and this would apply to this House, the Senate, the LCC, all pieces of the legislature with the amendment that was adopted, they would have to be read aloudable for everybody.
Representative Thiessen, before we take public testimony, let's see if there's any member questions for you at this time. Mm-hmm. Member questions for Representative Thiessen. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Thiessen, I like the bill. And I think that IT can solve a lot of these problems. I know we're not a fiscal policy committee, but I'm assuming there's going to be a fiscal note on this.
Representative Thiessen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if there will be a fiscal note because it would largely fall within the legislative budget to allocate out, but I probably think it should go to a finance committee. Okay. And I hope that there is, in some sense, a fiscal note because I think this will cost money, and I think it's actually money that would be well spent.
Yeah. And we are referring to the Committee on State Government Finance, which, as you know, is the vice chair of the Finance Committee.
Yep. And Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, I do think this is a good thing to do. We do thousands of documents through this place every day, and we owe it to the people who are citizens of our state. So I'm supportive of this. I think it's a good idea, and look forward to hearing it again soon in State GFI.
Thank you. Representative Thiessen. And Mr. Chair, I do want to acknowledge that the LCC and the House and the Senate are making efforts in this regard. I just don't think that they're moving as fast as they could, and I don't know why we would hold agencies to a standard that's different than one we want to live up to ourselves. But I do want to acknowledge the work that is going on.
The staff is working hard with the resources they have, I'll put it that way.
Yes, which goes to Representative Nash's question.
Other member questions at this time? With that, I'm going to open it up and see if there's anyone from the public who'd like to testify in the matter before the committee. Mr. Heller, would you like to proceed and share some thoughts with us today on House File that's before us here?
And hopefully, Mr. Chair, we can keep this relatively brief.
That is my hope, because you and I and Representative Peterson all have pensions tonight, which is after 9 o'clock,
yes.
About from what I'm understanding. So brevity and simplicity is helpful. Mr. Heller, if you would go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Chair Driscoll, my name is Rick Heller. I officially represent those that are print disabled found in the Higher Education Act of 2008 next to the blind. Those are only two. And then the twice exceptional found in the House File 1072 or Senate File 2319, Erickson and Pratt bills. I come here to testify on 1541, and I brought a couple boxes, I guess, one box of documents. I go around the committees, I collect documents, and to see if they're online at the same time, and having a hard time accessing this. I spoke at the 2018 forum on Disability Council on Disabilities. And here's some handouts today. And I've been posting my documents on a data practice commission. And those are accessible. Greg with the LCC made those accessible. The first page you'll see, it's 2018, and the second page is 2016. I think I'm just going to go to 2016.
Mr. Heller, just for members' clarification, the handouts you were referring to, members, are in your packets, and they are looking like this, and I think that Representative Teese and the bill author referenced those early in our conversation today as well. So just for members.
The primary thing, there's some history going back. I believe it's the one that the page that's from Jason's email back in 2015. I had filed a complaint through the survey at the legislature. That's not a complaint. It's about an accessibility. It's a survey piece because the legislature is exempt, as we know, from 16E.03. Basically, he could do number one there, number two, and number three. And it's the second page, right, by the way, on the back of the document. And the legislature got grant dollars from Minute as well. And that's in the other document. You'll find a history there of Greg, or I should say Diane, with the Legislative Court Commission, using grant dollars from Minute to make sure that when a document is in a PDF and they convert it and I get a number on it on the floor, it becomes accessible at that time. You know, just like today, they're doing another XXXX file in higher education, and they're not compliant to ADA 2008 regarding supplemental aid and service. I think there's enough history here, and obviously this stuff will be posted there. The other piece of this is timely. People look at stuff in a timely when I come to meetings, and it's not, if it's more than digital, I know there's a burden for people to get it to the chairs or their LAs and CAs in a timely manner. But if people aren't aware, because when Greg testified in Kiffmeyer's in January last year at government operation, he yielded the two questions, and two questions were this, not per quote, but do you have an accessibility policy? And do you have a continuous improvement plan about accessing information? He said no to both. So I look forward, as you look at this, that if Minute has still survived, and that grant dollars, which comes from your telephones, called TAM dollars, is available, that you tap into that to make providing more fairness and sameness for equity and quality and timely transparency at the Minnesota legislature. Or if it's not fully searchable, is a transparent government. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. If you've got any questions, I'm welcome to that as well.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Heller. Members, questions for Mr. Heller on his testimony today? I don't see any right now. Hang tight. There may be some follow-up questions. Anyone else from the public wishing to testify on the matter before the committee today? House File 1541 as amended. Anyone else wishing to testify on the House File 1541 as amended? Seeing none. Other member questions for Representative Thiessen, the bill author, or the testifier? Seeing none, Representative Thiessen, you may get your wish. That's a quick hearing.
I'll
give you the final word.
Okay. Nothing else to say.
Okay. I renew my motion that House File 1541, as amended, be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Thiessen. Members, we are done with our business for today. I will let you know that if you've been involved in government operations for any period of time, you know that we are getting into our very busy season here in the session. And so we are going to do our best to try to manage the agendas. I'd ask that all members arrive on time, and that way we can get started with business. And I'm going to ask GOP members of the committee to meet in my office for about 10 minutes after the committee meeting today. With that, we are adjourned.